WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning, it's the 15th of May, 2019. First up for my double billing this morning, I'm gonna have a Columbia workshop presentation of my client, Curly. This was adapted by Norman Corwin, based on a short story by Bernard Herrmann's wife, Lucille Fletcher. The original air date of this was the 7th of March, 1940. I'm just gonna jump right into it. It's about 30 minutes long. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the following play, any similarity to caterpillars, living or dead, is purely coincidental. The Columbia Workshop presents My Client Curly, a new radio play by Norman Corwin, based upon a short story by Lucille Fletcher Herrmann.
There are some things a man doesn't like to talk about because they're... Well, I'll just tell this story about my client, Curly, and then I'll go back to the agent business and try to forget it. But if I should get a lump in my throat while I'm telling it, I hope you'll understand, because this whole thing was so recent, I still feel pretty upset about it. To make a long story short, I'm out walking one day in the suburbs where I live when my attention is attracted by two kids sitting on the side of the road, and one of them is playing a harmonica. They're bent over watching something on the ground, and I, being curious, go over to see what it is. Hiya, boys. What you got there?
Oh, we got a trained caterpillar.
Yeah, what's trained about it?
He dances.
I don't believe it.
He sure does. Give us a nickel and we'll show you.
Oh, a racket, huh? All right, I'm a sucker. Here's two nickels.
Ah, thanks, mister. Okay, place the...
Wow. What do you know? Now stop. I'll be done. Stops right when you do.
Oh, sure. That's the way Stinky trained him. Didn't you, Stinky?
Oh, it was nothing.
Play some more, Stinky. Lies right down when you're finished.
Sure, he's talented, ain't he?
Come on up on my finger, Curly.
That's a boy.
Say, does Curly dance to any kind of music?
Nope. Only, yes, sir, that's my baby.
You mean to tell me he only dances to one tune?
That's right. I tried lots more, but I guess he only likes that one.
Well, why is that, do you suppose?
Well, I know. Says he's got a real musical ear. I guess that's what those two branches are in his head, huh? Musical ears.
No, that's his antenna.
Antenna? He ain't no radio set. I did like good one.
Say.
What?
I wonder if he's got any snake blood in him. You know, there are some snakes that dance.
No kidding.
Sure. Here, let me take your harmonica a minute.
Sure,
here. Curly may be related to one of them Asiatic snakes or something. Let me play it a minute. No, won't budge. I guess it's an American caterpillar, all right.
Oh, sure.
Look, fellas, I'll make you a proposition. How would you like to sell Curly?
How much?
Hey, wait a minute. I own Curly, and I don't want to sell him.
Well, why not, Stinky?
Well, because I... Because.
You know why he don't want to sell?
Why?
On account of he's stuck.
Oh, shut up, Fatso.
You mean... You like Curly so much you don't want to part with him?
I just don't want to sell him, that's all. Not even for a dollar. Not even for $2.
Well, of course, I don't think anybody'd ever offer you that much money.
I don't care.
He's my pet, and I want to keep him. Trained him from a pup.
Now, look, kiddo. I think you're a very bright and sensitive boy, and because of that, I'm going to make you an immediate cash payment of $5 for Curly.
$5? Holy mackerel, what do you say, Stinky, huh?
Gosh, I don't know.
Take it, I'm telling you, take it. Now you can buy your bike.
Sure is a lot of money, but you see, I like Curly, and I guess Curly likes me, too. And when we're alone, I talk to him, and he understands me. Curly likes to have me around. He's very intelligent, even though he don't look so smart.
Oh, he looks smart, all right.
That's all. My old man or nobody else can't never get him to move. He won't do nothing when they ask him. He lays down, just like on Spite almost. You know, if somebody took him away from me, Curly would die.
You think so?
Sure. He's only human, ain't he? He'd absolutely die.
Listen to me, Stinky. I'm going to talk to you man to man. This caterpillar you got is very valuable. He's worth a lot of money. Way more than $5, maybe.
No kidding.
Now, this is what we're going to do. Stinky, you're going to stay with Curly, and I'm going to manage both of you. Curly will be my client.
Well, what's that mean? What's a client?
Well, you wouldn't understand very well. That's something I'll have to explain to your parents, because I got to get their signatures on a long-term contract with option. You're a minor under the law, you see.
I didn't do anything wrong, did I?
That was how it began. I get Curly under my management and take him and Stinky with me. The first thing I do is start out after some publicity. And boy, do those reporters eat it up. Front page with pictures. Pictures of Curly. Pictures of Stinky. Pictures of me. Pictures of my client dancing on a leaf. Curling around the mayor's finger. Climbing up a pretty model's leg. Sitting in a tiny box at the opera. And headlines. Headlines like this in the Times.
Swing caterpillar sways to strains of Yes, Sir, That's My Baby. Fred Astaire of Insect World demonstrates almost human sense of rhythm.
The Post. Curly in custody of Stinky, young Svengali of caterpillars. The Herald Tribune.
Insect phenomenon learned to truck and truck garden manager of Earth.
The World Telegram.
The Curly Crawl becomes new national dance sensation.
The Daily News. Bug cuts rug.
Story on page two.
And sure enough, with all that publicity, things really begin happening. First, Bill Robinson introduces the Curly Capers at the Cotton Club.
Couple city.
Then Raymond Scott writes a song called The Caterpillar Creek. And half a dozen agencies bid for the rights to syndicate a comic strip.
429 papers, 5 days a week, making a grand total.
Other companies pay me royalties for Curly balloons and spaghetti and dolls and toys and picture books and decorations on the outside of drinking glasses.
Ma, buy me the glass with Curly's picture on it.
And to make a long story short, I get a vaudeville offer. The money begins to roll in. I hire an expensive suite and a secretary.
Curly Enterprises, good afternoon.
I buy Stinky a bike and a new suit of clothes.
Gee, thanks.
The publicity begins to pile up. And at the height of the excitement, I get a wire from Hollywood.
Offer $10,000 for Curly appearance in feature-length cartoon. Stop. Propose using live character for first time among cartoon characters. Stop. Appreciate immediate answer. Would like to rush story and production. Cordially, Walt Disney.
Miss Nielsen.
Yes?
Take a wire to Walt Disney, Hollywood, California.
Yes, sir.
Curly price, $100,000.
Is that all?
You think I should ask for more?
No, I mean, is there any more to the wire? Curly Enterprises. Just a moment, please. Time magazine on the line. Will you take it on the table phone?
Oh, sure. All right. Hello? Yeah, this is him. Well, you see... Yeah. No, I discovered him in the boy's possession. That's right. No.
Curly Enterprises.
Yeah, sure.
Well, he's busy on another
line.
No,
he hasn't yet.
Who?
Right.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
well,
I keep right here.
He wanted me to tell you to order a special airmail daily shipment of willow leaves from Florida.
What?
Wait a minute,
no,
will you?
Oh, no, no.
Curly Enterprises.
Yes.
Just a second, please. I'm just trying to get him in a minute. Yeah.
From
hello.
The very first.
Curly Enterprises. No, yes.
That's
well,
right.
Just a minute. Please.
Right.
Wait, just a second.
No,
Curly Enterprises.
Probably not for another week.
You better hire more secretaries.
Well, things are going along in great shape, and Curly's making us a bundle of dough, when all of a sudden I get three visitors I didn't figure on.
We have been reading about your wonderful specimen in the papers, and we have come to ask permission to examine it.
Examine it? What for?
We are lepidopterists.
Lepidopterists? But Curly's a caterpillar, not a leopard.
Ah, no, my dear man. Lepidoptery is a branch of entomology dealing with the insect order of which you're, shall we say, a client is a member.
Well, I'm sure Curly don't want to be examined by nobody.
Oh, now, come. If this caterpillar is as remarkable as the newspapers say, then you certainly owe science the courtesy of permitting an examination.
Exactly.
Yes, it would be nothing short of criminal to withhold such knowledge from science.
Well, you want to put it that way.
It will take no more than 2 minutes.
Well, I suppose it's all right. Come with me, please. Hello, Stinky.
Hello.
This is Master Stinky, gentlemen, discoverer and trainer of my client. He guards Curly all the time. Well, there he is in that box. Please be careful how you handle him.
Here you are.
Ooh. My. Muscular little fellow, isn't he?
Normal mandible. Unusually conspicuous. First, maxillae.
I say, watch out there, Doctor. He's trying to bite you.
Huh? Never been attacked by a caterpillar before. Astounding.
Ooh. Oh, my. See here, Doctor. Just notice this remarkable elongation of the abdominal feature.
Yes, quite. And doesn't this feature make you think of the Aglaes antiope?
Incredible.
Look here. Isn't this remarkable? Why, I've never seen such a cella except in the Melanogia Galathea. And the chitinization. No kidding.
Well, sir, congratulations. This is a remarkable specimen, even before we test its reactions to musical stimuli.
Oh, gosh, thanks.
It is of the ordinary genus Papilio rutilus, mind you, but it has the most extraordinary features.
Thanks very much.
We feel that the specimen would be much more valuable to society if you, instead of exhibiting it for commercial purposes, were to loan or donate it to the Museum of Natural History, where it could be further studied by the leading entomologists of the world.
Oh, but I...
Yes, when it dies, we can dissect it.
No, they're not going to take him away. Don't let him take Curly. Please, Curly, you've got to stay
with me. Don't cry,
my
boy. We're not going to hurt him.
An insect like this occurs probably once in a million years. Surely, for the sake of a few dollars, you're not going to risk injuring him by overwork?
Are you accusing me of sacrificing Curly's health for profit? Why, that's ridiculous! Curly is... Yes, come in.
Just another wire from the coast. Here's your bank to go for 20,000.
20? Tell him 100,000 or nothing!
Well, the papers get hold of the lepidopterist story, and there's another pile of publicity. It gets to be a moral issue, with preachers delivering sermons and all like that. I'm attacked editorially for exploiting caterpillar labor.
And in a nation faced by pressing legislative issues, striving to keep clear of foreign entanglements, and confronted on every hand by economic problems, what is it that occupies the concentration of millions from coast to coast? A caterpillar. And why is this? Because of the shameless exploitation of a little unsuspecting boy and a harmless insect by a mercenary agent who has turned to his own greedy personal advantage a natural phenomenon which belongs nowhere else but in a museum. The press at large is to be condemned for encouraging this Simon Legree, this pagan, this veritable slave trader to continue his career of rank exhibitionism, unabashed.
But on the other hand, I'm defended as an individualist who refuses to submit to regimentation.
A man owns a clever bug. He has the right to manage that bug. There is no question about his status as manager of that bug. Yet, he is asked to release his client for scientific purposes. He refuses. He has a right to refuse. Nobody denies that right. Yet, in certain quarters of the press, he is attacked. His character is slurred.
aspersions are cast upon him. He is looked upon as a pariah, as a Philistine. Indeed, one of our esteemed contemporaries compares him with Simon Legree and Fagin merely because he insists upon his constitutional guarantee. We say it is consoling to find a man in this day of reckless encroachment upon the individual who will stand up and fight for his rights. We wish him well. We stand behind him, four square, our feet firmly implanted in the soil from which his bug has sprung, to support his defiance of those who...
The American Legion and the Daughters of the American Revolution send Curly an engraved silver-plated twig and a miniature flag to put on top of his box. The Maharaja of Lahore sends him some willow leaves from the sacred willow trees of the temple.
Gee, look. A package from a place named Lakeshore with a lot of funny-looking stamps.
Lahore, not Lakeshore.
Can I have the stamps?
Yeah, here you are. I signed Curly up for a super special movie short, and it sweeps the box offices of the country in spite of terrible weather, including blizzards and rainstorms. Variety reports, Liz and Drizz, fail to fizzle biz as bug wows V.O. from N.Y. to L.A. Life magazine runs a Margaret Burke White picture of Curly on the cover with the caption, Curly. CBS does a pickup direct from Curly's box, bringing the sound of Curly eating dinner.
This is Jack Nell speaking to you from the headquarters of Curly Enterprises, where we have a microphone buried among willow leaves to pick up the sound of the world's leading insect dancers busy eating dinner.
The New Yorker comes out with a cartoon showing Martha Graham nibbling willow leaves.
Did you see this cartoon in the New Yorker?
Let me see. Well, what's funny about that?
Well, for heaven's sake, don't you get the point?
No.
Well, don't you know who Martha Graham is?
Yes.
Well, you know who Curly is, of course.
The caterpillar.
Yes. Well, now, you see, Curly...
Walt Disney raises his bid to $50,000, but I still hold out for $100,000. Grover Whalen invites Curly to do an English country dance on the cover of the Magna Carta at the World's Fair. And to make a long story short, everything's gone along hunky-dory until one day some more public-spirited guys get a hold of Curly. Only this time they're not scientists, but musicians.
And therefore, in the interests of music, we of the committee feel that you would be rendering an invaluable service to musical knowledge if you'd permit us to test the effect of classical music on your client.
But what good will that do anybody?
Why, it may open up an entirely new field of psychology in relation to music. The world knows very little about the musical instincts of animals and nothing at all about insects.
But you're wasting your time. Curly dances to only one tune.
Have you tried other tunes?
Why, sure. Tell them what you played, Stinky.
I played it, It Ain't Gonna Rain No More.
Yep.
My Country Tis of Thee.
Uh-huh.
Let me see, the Beer Bottle Polka.
That's right.
Shine on Harvest Moon. The music goes round
and
round.
Ah, but no classical music.
Sure we did. I myself played Our Sweet Mystery of Life by Victor Herbert.
But you haven't tried any symphonies, have you?
Well, Disney's trying to get us for a silly symphony right now, as late as...
No, I'm afraid you don't understand. Let me explain what we propose to do. We get Curly in a studio with an orchestra and go through a careful series of tests using selected symphonic music of dance-like tempi. Now, by the choice of representative work...
All right. I know you're tired, gentlemen. We've now been through 67 pieces already, but let's try a few more and then we'll quit till tomorrow.
Hasn't the caterpillar moved at all?
No, so far he hasn't budged once. But maybe we'll get him with the habanera from Carmen. Stop. All right, let's try number 69, Rosamunda Ballet. Stop. Next, number 70, Strauss Perpetua Mobile.
For 2.5 days this went on, and finally after the 202nd try, something happened that really made the papers sit up and take notice all over again. The Amalgamated Press next day carried this story.
Curly, the Terpsichorean caterpillar, today staggered scientist and musician when he suddenly went into a stately dance upon hearing the second movement of Beethoven's Eighth Symphony. The movement, marked Allegretto Scherzando, was the 203rd musical sampling performed in an effort to determine whether the super caterpillar could or would dance to anything beside the song, Yes, Sir, That's My Baby. The insect further astonished observers by dancing in a contrapuntal manner to an arrangement of melodies from both the song and the movement. Scientists are unable to explain the phenomena. The management of the caterpillar announced, meanwhile, that Curly will appear as the lead in a ballet entitled Extravaganza for Insects Only by William Saroyan, and that Curly will also be seen soon in a dance recital at Carnegie Hall.
Well, then things really begin to break for us. Mrs. Roosevelt writes about it in her column, My Day.
It is not often that a creature smaller than one's little finger can completely captivate the imagination of millions. Yet such is the remarkable truth about the caterpillar named Curly. And only today I was telling the president that it has been many years...
There's talk among stamp collectors of issuing a special Curly stamp.
And since the Curly stamp would be the only insect subject in existence, its value to philately would naturally assume...
Scientific societies offer to investigate Curly's genius. And would you believe that the annual convention of the American Lepidoptological and Entomological Academy even invites Stinky to lecture before it?
So I said to my mother, Ma, can I have a penny? I want to buy a piece of candy. So my mother says yes, and she gives me the candy. So on the way to the store, I see a caterpillar, and he's crossing the road. So I stopped to watch it, see? And then I picked it up, and then I started to whistle a song, and it happened to be. Yes, sir. That's my baby.
And all this time, the money keeps coming in. We're getting along fine, although it costs a lot to keep up my expensive offices and staff of secretaries. But I'm figuring on getting the big dough, the $100,000 from Disney, and then retiring, see? Well, to make a long story short, there are a couple of exchanges of telegrams and phone calls with me holding out for my price. And then one night, Disney wires...
We'll meet your price of $100,000. Please fly out with Curly next plane.
Wow, am I excited. I'd rush into the next room where Stinky and Curly are sleeping. Stinky, wake up. We're rich. We're practically millionaires.
Oh, man.
Oh, come on, get your clothes on. Hurry. You're going to take a long airplane ride with me and Curly.
Huh?
And boy, I'm going to buy Curly the juiciest willow leaf he ever ate in his life. Oh, now I'm gonna tell the news to Curly. Here you are, little fella. Here you... Where is he? Why ain't he in his box? Where's Curly? Curly!
I put him to bed, right? Ain't he in his box?
Quick! Look all around the room.
Curly!
Under the carpet,
Curly,
under the bed,
Curly,
on the walls, everywhere!
Curly.
And be careful where you walk!
Oh, yeah. Hey, Curly, come back here! Curly! Where are you, Curly?
Curly!
Come on, Curly!
Curly!
Curly,
Curly, listen!
Curly.
Yes, that's my baby.
No, sir. I don't mean baby.
Yes, sir.
Curly.
That's my baby now.
Yes, sir. That's my baby.
Curly. Curly, I love you. Where are you?
Don't leave us.
$100,000 bucks,
yes,
Curly.
Sir. That's my
yes,
baby.
Yes, sir.
No,
that's
sir.
My baby.
Okay,
hey.
Baby.
Hey, Stinky,
what?
Here.
What?
Come here, take this flashlight
yes.
And look for him along the corridor. Ask the manager to let you look at the bottom of the elevator shaft.
Sir.
Meanwhile, I'll phone the police.
Yes, sir.
Operator. Operator. Get me police headquarters. Operator.
Calling all cars. Calling all cars. Be on the lookout for a dancing caterpillar. Be on the lookout for a dancing caterpillar. C-A-T-E-R-P-I. L-L-A-R, caterpillar, that is all.
Lance, the Federal Bureau of Investigation will neither deny or confirm rumors that Curly, the $100,000 caterpillar, was kidnapped. G-men are investigating closely.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been requested by the civic authorities to make the following announcement. Whenever you hear the song, Yes, Sir, That's My Baby, unquote, Will you please watch very carefully, wherever you may be, for a dancing caterpillar in your vicinity? This announcement is in reference to Curly, the famous caterpillar.
The whole country searches in vain. Nobody's seen Curly. The police throw out a dragnet. Posses are formed. Radio stations play "Yes, Sir, That's My Baby" at intervals throughout the day and ask all listeners to be on the lookout for a dancing caterpillar. Curly fans from all over send in money for a fine Curly fund.
And I am privileged, as president of the Fine Curly Club, to announce the event that the Fine Curly Fund has reached the impressive and staggering total of $12,385.14, with the entire South yet to be heard. And I am one that every mother's son, yes, and every father's boy, will pledge his or her heart and hand to the one main and permanent objective that Curly may be caught.
But nobody finds Curly. And now that he's gone, I begin to realize how much I love that bug. I begin to understand why it was Stinky couldn't bear to sell him to me way back in those happy days. I can't bear thinking of willow leaves. I find myself hating all birds and looking suspiciously at cats. And I take to drinking.
What will it be for you, sir?
A triple zombie.
Triple? Are you sure?
Triple zombie!
Yes, sir.
And even Stinky tries to drink his way out of his grief.
And what will it be for you, young man?
A cup of coffee. And make it black.
Are you sure you want...
Black coffee!
Meanwhile, sympathizers from all over the world, including Scandinavian countries, send me caterpillars, hoping maybe they've found Curly and are eligible for a reward offered by the Fine Curly Club.
Mister, here's another barrel of caterpillars from Australia. Well, I put it.
Give it to the zoo.
Which zoo, mister?
Any zoo, as long as you get it out of here.
Okay, mister.
Days go by. Weeks go by. I send Stinky home.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Stinky. Well, at least you got a nice suit of clothes on you and a fine automobile and a chauffeur to drive you home in it.
I'd rather have Curly back again.
Yeah, I know. Well, goodbye.
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 And then one day I'm sitting in my place, playing sadly on the piano with one finger, as is my wont. All of a sudden, out from under the music rack, creeps Curly. Only he's changed. He's different. He's not dancing anymore. He's a butterfly. Curly. Hello, Curly. You're a big boy now, ain't you? He flutters his wings a little when I say that. And I stroke his antenna, which are now very long and beautiful. I see he's getting restless for the outdoors, where he no doubt hears the call of his mate. So I sing a farewell to him.
My baby. No. Baby, maybe.
He flutters around my head and then flies over to a picture of Stinky on the bureau and then flutters back to me. And after one long look at me, flies out of the window, never more to come back again. Make a long story short, I sit down and I feel like crying. In fact, I do cry. Yeah. Who would ever think that a grown man would ever cry about a caterpillar? But I do. And I am ashamed to admit it. Well, that's the story of my client.
You have been listening to My Client Curly, written and produced by Norman Corwin and based upon the original short story of Lucille Fletcher Herman. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Thank you, lads. Yes, that was the Columbia Workshop and My Client Curly, as you heard, written and adapted by Norman Corwin, with a short story by Lucille Fletcher. That had an original air date of the 7th of March, 1940. It's still very early in Norman Corwin's career. And before Lucille Fletcher wrote her more notable and famous radio plays. Yeah, I think right now, just go ahead and fulfill the FCC obligation. And before I introduce the next show, this is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, Medford, and or WMFO.org.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, that public service announcement. All right, next up, we're going to play episode 16, Advice to the Lovelorn, on, I don't know why everybody thinks they need to text me while I'm on air here. Advice to the Lovelorn, a frontier gentleman, John Daner, again, returning. This has an original air date of the 18th of May, 1958. Again, this is Arthur. Thanks for listening.
I learned two things in Cheyenne. One, that Hucky Dummy is baking powder bread with raisins. The other, that love's labor is not always lost, even if you don't know how to use a gun.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
I had spent a week in Chugwater with Hyena Bob Saunders, who ran the Cheyenne and Black Hills stage station. Now, I was on my way back to Cheyenne to send off to the London Times one or two of the more choice stories he had told me. There was only one other passenger in the stage with me, a man in his middle 20s. He introduced himself as Tom Hart. He was well-dressed And at first glance, I took him to be an Easterner.
No, I was born in Kansas, reared in Montana Territory. Now I call Wyoming my home. How about you?
Born in England. I'm trying to make a living writing articles on the West for the London Times.
Oh, you been in Cheyenne yet?
Oh, yes.
How are things?
Well, that's hard to say. I haven't seen too much of it.
3 years since I was there. I guess the town's changed some. But this road sure hasn't.
Well, Cheyenne's thriving, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I've heard. Big cattle interest.
I gather you're coming back from the East.
These fancy dude clothes, huh? Yeah, I've been in the East and other parts. He gets tired of drifting, though. It's time to go home. That's where I'm headed.
Cheyenne?
Yeah. I made me some good money. Now I figure to get married, raise a flock of kids.
That's a worthwhile project.
There's a girl in Cheyenne, Kendall. We've been writing. Leastways, up to a year back, I got a letter from her when I was in New York.
I wish you luck.
Thanks. You married?
No.
Well, they say it ties a man down, but I figure if a gal's got her mind made up for marriage, you might as well drop your rope on her, because if you don't, somebody else is going to.
I see you have the philosopher's attitude toward marriage.
Well, I don't know about that, but I've been lone wolfing long enough. Carrie's her name. Carrie Hudson. Used to be a cookie pusher up at the Blue Star Cafe.
A cookie pusher?
A waitress.
Oh.
I'll tell you what. When we get in town, you come on up with me to the Blue Star. Used to have the best eats in town. I guess they still do. I'll be proud to have you meet Carrie.
We spent the rest of the journey discussing matters of both consequence and triviality. Hart had received no formal education, but his travels had given him a certain sophistication, and the time passed pleasantly. When we arrived in Cheyenne, I tried to persuade him that his fiancée would be much happier to greet him alone, but Hart would have none of it. He insisted that I accompany him, and so together we walked to where he knew the Blue Star Cafe to be.
Charlie Bannister runs the place. Charlie looks like bad medicine. There's some says he used to be a short trigger man, but it ain't true. By the way he looked after Carrie, you'd think she was his own daughter. I sure had to play it straight before Charlie let me start riding herd on the gal. Say, listen, you hungry?
A little.
You wait till you taste Charlie's hucky dummy. He used to be a range cook, and there's never been a man made hucky dummy the way Charlie makes it. Hey, that's funny.
Huh. Looks as though it's closed.
No, it does for a fact. First time I ever knew the Blue Star closed. You see anybody moving around in there?
No.
What? She's open. Hello, Charlie?
Whoever you are, come on in back.
You don't figure. Hey, Charlie, you'll...
What do you say, Tom?
What? Charlie, this is a fellow I met on the stage coming in. J.B. Kendall.
How are you?
Hello, Charlie.
What's happened? How'd you get like this?
I guess you ain't heard. There was a shoot-up in here a year or so ago.
Carrie. Is Carrie all right?
When it was finished, the boys had done the shooting, robbed me, and hightailed it out. I ain't moved from the bed since, Tom.
What about Carrie?
She ain't here no more.
Well, where'd she go?
Ask Jack Feeney up to Holloman Saloon.
I'm asking you, Charlie.
And I ain't saying. You and me was friends, Tom. I'd leave keep it that way.
Now, what's Jack Feeney got to do with it? What, Charlie?
All right, I'll tell you. Carrie took a shine to him while you was gone.
That's a lie.
I told Feeney to leave her alone. There was words. I threw him out. Same night he comes back with one of his boys and they fill me full of lead.
Well, wasn't this Feeney arrested then, Charlie?
Sure.
but it was his word against mine, and Carrie took his side and swore at the trial it was someone else had come in and shot me up.
Is she with Feeney now?
I ain't seen her since that day. Hey, Tom, boy, while you're here, pump me a jug of water, will you? Old Doc Thorne says I got to drink plenty of water. And Mrs. Carroll's been helping out, but she ain't showed up yet today.
Yeah, sure. I'll be right back, Charlie.
Thank you. I ain't got the stomach to tell him all the truth of it. You'll have to find out sooner or later for yourself. She married Feeney.
Oh? When?
Yeah. Right before the trial. Guess it was partly my fault. I should have seen it. Gary getting lonesome waiting for Tommy and Feeney coming in here. His fancy spending ways. He runs a gambling in Holloman Saloon. Well, next thing you know, Carrie's looking cow eyes at him.
Well, don't you think it'd be better to tell Hart now about the marriage?
Hey, listen, you keep an eye on him, will you? Tom's got a bad temper. He gets it in his head to start trouble, there's likely to be a killing.
All the more reason to tell him then. This way, he'll go up to the saloon looking for her.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It wouldn't be so good.
Here's your water, Charlie. Is there anything else I can do for you?
Yeah. Stay away from Holloman's saloon. I lied to you before, Tom. She's there with Feeney. They're married.
Is there anything else I can do for you, Charlie?
No, reckon not. Hey, come on back and see me if you have a mind to. I'd sure like to hear about your travels.
I'll do that. So long.
You take it easy, Tom.
Goodbye, Charlie.
You take it easy, Tom.
Well, I guess I'll be seeing you, Kendall.
Where will you go, Tom?
Not that it's any of your business, but I guess you ask out of kindness. I'm going up to Holloman's saloon and have me a few drinks.
Oh, well, mind if I come along?
No. No, I don't mind.
We walked down the main street. I knew it was pointless to tell him that trying to see his girl was the worst thing he could do to himself. I rather liked him, and I suppose that's the reason I went with him. He didn't say a word until we reached the saloon. Then he said,
"You go ahead, Kendall. I'll meet you in there in a few minutes. I got an errand to do first."
"Well, I'll come with you. I don't mind."
"I do. Just order me a bottle of whiskey. I'll see you inside."
"All right."
"Well, hello, stranger. You're a little early, but what's your pleasure? Cards? A dance?"
"As a matter of fact, I'm looking for Carrie."
"Oh, for what?"
"Are you Carrie?"
"Yes."
"Can we sit at a table?"
"I don't sit with customers, mister. That's for the girls. You want to talk business, you can talk to my husband."
"A friend of yours is in Cheyenne. Tom Hart."
"Tom?"
"He's just heard about you. He'll be coming in here in a minute. I thought you ought to know."
"Thanks, mister. How did he take the news?"
"He got it from Charlie. Well, he'll probably get very drunk. I imagine I'd do the same."
"He won't make trouble."
"I'll try to see that he doesn't."
"Has he said anything about me?"
"Only that he was expecting to marry you."
"He isn't right. I thought..." "It doesn't matter. Anybody got the price of a drink in his pocket's welcome. That goes for Tom Hart as well as the next man. You want a table, mister?"
Yes, a table would be fine."
"This way." "What are you drinking?"
"Oh, beer, I think. Yes, and a bottle of whiskey."
"My husband, Jack, doesn't like him. I wouldn't want Tom to get hurt on account of me. Will you get him out of here if he's looking for someone to sharpen his horns on?"
"I'll do my best."
"Thanks. Beer and a bottle of whiskey, listen.
Beer and a bottle of whiskey."
"Well, where's the drinks?"
"On their way, Tom." "What's the gun for, Tom?"
"She's right clean and shining, ain't she? Sent me back $20.
"Put it away."
"Uh-uh. I bought it and I aim to use it. As soon as I get drunk enough, I'm going to kill me a skunk called Feeney."
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. Fast with a quip, faster at making time with a beautiful girl, but fastest of all with a clue. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, will be along with his latest insurance investigation later today on CBS Radio. Get next to Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on most of these stations. Now, we return you to the Anthony Ellis production of Frontier Gentlemen.
Tom Hart and I sat at a table in Holloman's saloon, and between us lay a brand new .44 revolver. After a moment, Tom picked it up and slowly rotated the cylinder. He didn't turn as Carrie came toward us, didn't look up as she put down my beer and Tom's bottle of whiskey.
Yes, sir. It's a mighty pretty talking iron.
How are you, Tom?
Oh, Carrie. Yeah, I heard you was here. Well, you're looking good. You know, back east, they drink a toast to new married folks. So I drink to you, Carrie. Well, where's your husband, Mrs. Feeney?
Jack's out. Don't make trouble, Tom. What's done is done.
That's the way you see it, huh, Carrie?
You never wrote.
I didn't have to. You were my girl. I told you I'd be back, but you couldn't wait.
I waited 2 years.
You was in such a hurry, you had to get Feeney to put Charlie out of the way, too.
That's not so, Tom.
Charlie, he's lying in bed. He don't move anything but his arms anymore. Your husband did a right fine job. You ain't even been to see him since.
That doesn't do much good, you know.
She's not the same anymore. At first I thought she was, but she's not. She was a girl. A nice girl when I left. She got too much paint now. Looks like a honky-tonk woman.
Finish your drink, we'll go.
There's time. There's plenty of time. I want to have a talk with Jack Feeney. He shot up a friend of mine, you remember? You want to leave? It's all right, Kendall. You go ahead.
I'll stay.
You want a whiskey to chase down a beer?
No, thank you.
You know why I'm going to get drunk?
I've got a rough idea.
Yeah? How rough?
Well, Tom, you know, you really haven't got any right to start trouble with Feeney.
What about Charlie? What about him?
The court said Feeney was innocent.
Charlie says he did it.
And if you shoot Feeney, they'll find you guilty. What'll you prove?
She said she was going to wait. She said she loved me. No, ain't that a laugh? Love.
That's why you're getting drunk. Then you'll be able to get angry without thinking.
You talk too much.
Well, you asked me.
Where'd she go?
Up the stairs.
Hey, you figure she was lying. Maybe Jack Feeney's here. She's going up to tell him.
I don't know.
Well, I'm going to find out.
No, I wouldn't. No, sit down, Tom.
Give me that gun, Kendall.
Now, you sit down. You're not that drunk yet, and you're not going up there to start shooting.
Give me the gun.
No.
You're bigger than me, but I ain't afraid to tangle with you.
I didn't say you were.
All right. I'm going up there without a gun.
Oh, don't be a fool. Tom.
Don't rile me, mister.
Tom, she's married to him. You'll find another girl.
Hey, where are you going? How come you're going up to me and my wife's rooms?
I figured to find you there, Feeney.
Well, Tom Hart.
That's right.
I stepped out for a while. If I'd known you was going to pay a visit, I'd have come back sooner. Have you seen my wife, Tom?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen her.
Well, we'll have to get her down and have a friendly drink together. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting your friend.
J.B. Kendall.
Put her there, Kendall. Carrie, come on down. Hey, Lester, bring a bottle of champagne.
I didn't come to drink with you, Feeney. I came to kill you.
Well, sure, you can do that any time, but you'll have a drink first, huh? Here, sit down, boys. When'd you get back in town, Tom?
Today. And I seen Charlie.
Yeah? I heard about Charlie. You was too bad him getting shot like that.
The way Charlie tells it, you did the shooting.
Poor feller. They say it made him a mite loco.
Here's your champagne, Mr. Feeney.
And here comes the prettiest little woman in Cheyenne. Sit down, Carrie. I hear you've met Mr. Kendall here. And Tom?
Yes.
Well, it's like old times. Except a thing or two has changed. I got me a new wife. What'd you get back east, Tom?
I'm telling you something, Feeney. I had a gun, which a friend of mine didn't figure I was drunk enough or maybe sober enough to use. Well, I'm going out and get another one. And the next time I see you, I'm going to be using it.
He sure is excitable, ain't he? You figure he's still galling over you, Carrie?
What does it matter?
What do you think, Kendall?
I think that Tom Hart's in a mood for murder. Whether it's because of your wife or Charlie, I don't know.
Jack didn't shoot Charlie, Mr. Kendall. I know he didn't because we were together that night.
That's true. Must have been a couple of cowboys dropped at Charlie's place and robbed him, gave him lead poison, but it wasn't me.
Why does Charlie say it was?
That was at the trial. He said it then, too. Of course, my lawyer, he showed where it was dark in Charlie's cafe, and Charlie couldn't rightly tell who was in there that night. Charlie figured it was me because we'd had words the same day.
I think I better find Tom.
Ah, don't you go worrying, Kendall. You cool down. Besides, Tommy ain't no kind of a hand with a gun, and he knows it. If he comes looking for me, we'll take care of him.
Which was exactly what I was afraid of. I spent the next hour going from one saloon to the next, looking for Tom. I couldn't find him. And so I went back to see the one person who I thought might be able to help.
No, he ain't come back here. Took it bad, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the trouble with that boy. Everything nice and easy with him. Never could figure what he was really thinking. But when he busted loose...
Charlie, are you still positive it was Feeney who shot you?
Sure I am.
Well, Carrie says he was with her that night.
She's lying.
Why would she lie?
Well, don't ask me how come a woman does what she does.
I think the one reason that Tom's going after Feeney now is a matter of pride. He doesn't want to back down. He'll use you as an excuse.
I don't need any man to fight my war.
Do you think there's a chance... Even a remote one, that it was dark that night you were shot and perhaps you were mistaken about Feeney?
Well, I guess there's a chance, but...
Charlie, if I can find Tom, if he knows that, if you'll tell...
Shh. Am I outside? Carrie.
Is he here?
No.
I had to come. I don't want him to get hurt. I wanted to talk with him.
Ain't much for you to say, seems to me.
I made a mistake. I'm not making another. It was Jack shot you, Charlie. I lied for him.
Uh-huh.
He said if I didn't, either he or his boys would get you for good. He said he'd kill me, too.
Then why'd you marry him?
I had to. That doesn't matter now. We've got to find Tom. Jack sent two of his boys out looking for him. He wants to kill Tom.
Why?
I guess he knows. He's always known how I feel.
And I'm going back to the saloon. You'd better stay here, Carrie.
Couldn't find him, huh?
No.
Well, he's probably sobered up by now. He'll be all right. Yeah, nice fella, Tom. Just a little too hot-headed for his own good, that's all.
Well, I imagine when a man comes home and finds his girl married to another man, it can be a little upsetting.
Sure, sure.
And then seeing a good friend of his lying paralyzed, shot by the man who married his girl, it's likely to make a chap unreasonable.
Even though he's wrong, yeah, I see what you mean.
Then if... he finds out that the girl's husband forced her to lie, and if he finds out that the girl still loves him, he'd be in quite a state.
Yeah, that wouldn't be so good, would it?
Hmm. Now, if I were the husband, I'd want to get rid of that fellow, say a fellow like Tom, because my life wouldn't be safe for 1 minute. I'd send some men out looking for him with orders to shoot on sight.
You got any more ideas along that line?
Well, if...
A man like Tom had a friend. The friend wouldn't want to see Tom, bushwhacked, I think is the word.
That friend is talking himself into mite of trouble.
You think so? Then the friend would make another suggestion.
Yeah?
The husband is quite obviously a most unpleasant person. And the best thing he could do would be to give his wife a divorce so that she can live a decent life with Tom Hart.
I'm back, Feeney.
Yeah, I see you are, Tom.
Kendall, get away from me. I'm giving him a chance to draw, which is more than he did for Charlie.
You heard him, Kendall. It's a fair fight.
I heard. Tom, look out behind you!
Thank you, Kendall.
Oh, not at all. Those are two of Mr. Feeney's chums. They've been looking for you. Now, Feeney, you were saying something about a fair fight.
Now, listen, Tom.
Draw.
I ain't fighting with you.
You ain't got the guts of a lizard. Draw.
I told you I ain't...
Hey, son of a gun!
I ain't fighting.
Well, I ain't!
Oh, my. Sounded as though you broke jaw, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah, didn't it?
I think Mr. Feeney will be leaving town. I also think he'll want to give Carrie a divorce.
Oh?
I thought you might be interested. Incidentally, what would you have done if he had drawn on you?
I don't know. Never thought about it. He probably would have killed me.
Yes. I think he would. Well, I'll take care of the arrangements here. You better go over to Charlie's now. Carrie's waiting.
Waiting? For me?
Well, I don't imagine it's for me.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Vic Perrin, Virginia Gregg, Jack Crucian, and Harry Bartell. Music was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch.
Episode 16 of Frontier Gentlemen, Advice to the Lovelorn. Original air date, the 18th of May, 1958. Frontier Gentlemen only ran for one season, and as you heard, it was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis. He would also go on to write some TV shows. Nothing like a good bar fight here on a Wednesday morning to get things going. That's one thing I kind of take exception to with John Daner's character there is he's kind of shed his British accent for a gentleman, an Englishman, riding in the American West. This is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour. You have listened to The Grand Hour. First half of the show I played Columbia Workshop presentation of My Client Curly, written and adapted and written by Norman Corwin, with a short best short story with Lucille Fletcher. If you missed it, there is the archive at WMFO.org. There's no show following, so I'm going to play out the rest of Along the Picket Fence here by the Marysville High School Band. Thanks for listening. Have a nice day. Actually, Matt will be back on the Whirlpool.